Three more goals, three more points, 3 points clear in sixth. The first away clean sheet since August and the best win on the road for more than a year. Big. I think that's the only way you can describe Norwich City's victory over Stoke on Saturday. And we are here to reflect on it in all its wonderful glory. They've been rare away wins this season, so you have to cherish one when it does come along. I'm your host, Connor Southall, joined by Samuel Seaman and the man who I think had probably the perfect Saturday, really, Paddy Davitt, who before kickoff learnt that his team, Coventry City, were going to Wembley and then got to watch Norwich City dismantle Stoke in fairly routine fashion. Now, if certain alcoholic beverages did Saturdays, Paddy, I think yours would be pretty close to perfection, wouldn't it?
Yeah, the only downside was somebody got us lost because they couldn't read the sat nav properly. Maybe you want to tell that anecdote on the way home, Connor. Not on the way home, but on the rest of this pod. But no, I'm joking, of course. I'm pulling your leg, as you do to me often. Yes, it was a good... it was a very good Saturday. And particularly, I mean, very unprofessional team news, not from your point of view, but from my point of view, because I had just second screen going on. It was just reaching the climax. And I think when we started the team news, i.e. an hour before the teams sort of kicked off, I think Coventry were winning. Then they were losing because they conceded twice. And then, bizarrely, they scored two late goals. So 97 and 100, I think, if I'm not mistaken. So, as you pithily observed, that just means they'll get beat 6-0 by Man City at Wembley. But it's Wembley. So, and the way things are going, I've actually had a bit of dialogue with a big fan of all our content, but a good mate of mine from back home, Rich, today. And anything which is relevant back to what we're discussing, he thinks that might hinder now Coventry and their bid to get in the playoffs because the distraction now is going to be, well, it's going to be off the Richter, really. It's going to be Wembley for now. They've got already now two rearranged games, one of which was Hull yesterday, which is why Norwich have been able to take full advantage. The teams were seventh and eighth, and they were obviously sixth at kickoff. So, but also, I think Ipswich were due to go there the FA Cup semi-final weekend now. So that can't help, I don't think, Mark Robbins and the boys, because, as you rightly say, the cup trail will run cold at Wembley against either Man City, Liverpool / United, as we record, or Chelsea, Leicester. So, yeah, but it is what it is. Yeah, on a personal level, I had a wonderful day, and so did the Norwich fans, and that's what we're here to discuss. So, yeah, it was a very good weekend all round, no doubt.
Yeah, very quickly, and I will share that sat-nav anecdote. Who do you want in the semis? Who is for you like the perfect encounter? I guess obviously probably Leicester of the teams that are left. Obviously, we're recording this before any of the ties have been played on Sunday, so you could look very silly when people watch this in 24 hours' time. But of the teams available and the teams in the hat, who would you like Coventry to face at Wembley? Do you have a preference?
Well, Leicester would be mainly because the chances of them actually winning the game. They beat Leicester earlier in this season at the CBS, and they were a bit unlucky to lose. I think it was the opening day of the season, actually, yes. Leicester. Shouldn't really have lost that game. And it is, in those parts, a derby. The M69 derby is not many miles separate those two clubs. So, of those, but I fully expect Chelsea to do the business. So, when the draw's made, well, I mean, I'm not as negative as you for a change, Connor. It might not be six, but I have no real optimism that they will be returning at some point in May. And as Chris Gorham pointed out, I think scheduling of it is that would be quite the nightmare if, miracle of miracles, Cov went all the way to the playoff final, because I think it's the same weekend, by all accounts, the FA Cup final, playoff final. It's not a scenario we'll need to worry about.
We
won't need to worry about that. But I don't mind now. I think, I mean, they've obviously, you know, to get to the last four is no mean achievement. It's only the second time they've ever reached that stage. Last time they won it back in 87 in the black and white era. So, just more memories. And that's what it's all about. And hopefully, from a Norwich perspective, we're all back there in May for the playoff final and more memories to be made, because obviously anybody who was privileged to be there in 2015 in Middlesbrough, you know, I'm not going to speak for Norwich fans, but I do know a lot who say that was their best day in their Norwich City supporting life, to be there with friends, family, and experience the whole range of emotions and what was a wonderful day. And we all want a piece of that again, don't we? And fair play to David Wagner and those players. They are, as it stands, with 8 games left to go, in the box seat. They're in that sixth position. And now it's up to the others to chase them. Coventry, Hull, Sunderland, Preston, maybe even Middlesbrough. But if Norwich continue in the same vein we saw again at the pot on Saturday in the Potteries, then I don't think they're getting caught. And I think we will be going into a playoff football. And boy, you look at the teams who are in and around that a little bit higher, the top five at the minute. And that is going to be some seriously exciting football to look forward to. So long may it continue, because I think we all feared not all that many months ago, going back to that pre-festive spell of a lot of angst and frustration and, you know, fans not having the manager and not having the players, for it all to come back together again is remarkable in its own right. And let's just hope now they continue on and clear all the hurdles in their path. And then what will be in the playoffs. But if you're a Norwich fan, you've got to be hugely excited now at what lies ahead, I think.
Yeah, it's certainly all there for them, and you know, I will explain, because you referenced and teed up the sat nav anecdote. You know, away days very rarely go particularly smoothly, but yeah, this was completely an error on my behalf. We were looking for a certain service station. I ended up not concentrating when I was putting it into the sat nav before beginning the drive from the Bet365, and actually put the town, village, whatever it was that it's situated. So the first part of it, and we ended up basically driving around there for 10 minutes until I worked out my error. But we did get there in the end, and there's a particular food outlet that we like, but we won't mention because they don't sponsor us and whatnot. So yeah, that was the error. But you know, I think given the day that we'd had, the boys forgive me pretty quickly, which is good. And even if they were slightly hungry by the time we got there, and hey, we got a nice detour of a little part of the Midlands, so that's always a benefit. Sam, I mean, away form and following Norwich City away from home this season hasn't been enjoyable often. I think that's fair to say. This is their first victory on the road since that whole win in January. Only their second of 2024 and only their fifth of the season, as a reference in the opening spiel, really. It's their first clean sheet since that 4-0 victory at Huddersfield. It's remarkable that, given their season and given their progress over recent weeks, that it's perhaps taken as long as it has to get to this point. But by gosh, what a performance it was yesterday at Stoke.
Yeah, it feels a bit strange. It doesn't feel like it's been that long since they won away from home. Obviously, we've been talking about it for a little while and we've been asking questions about it and analysing it. But given the positive mood that was created by the home form and by the, obviously, ascension into the top six in the Championship, I was thinking yesterday, after I did the fan reaction outside the away end, I was thinking, why did they seem so much more excited than usual? And then I think, actually, they haven't had a day like that for 2 months. So, yeah, I think it was a really significant occasion, not only to sort of stumble over the away win line, which they have at times. You look at, I think Bristol City is the first one that comes to my mind, really. And even Hull, although that was an impressive win against a team that had been doing really well, that was rearguard action for the large majority of that game. So, for them to go away from home, actually dominate a game, assert themselves, as we've been saying, is probably the route to achieving that same success away from Carrow Road that they have in Norfolk, is, I think, really encouraging for how this season goes from there. And given the dedication there's been from a lot of those away supporters, the spirits they've remained in, despite the fact that, obviously, they haven't seen too many exciting results away from home in the last few months, has been really encouraging. I felt sense that connection between the players and the away fans, especially yesterday, because the tunnel was in the corner right next to where those fans are. So as they were coming onto the pitch, they had that reception from the fans. As they went in at half time 2-0 up, they had that, and then at full time it was a natural meeting between two sides of the coin that were very, very pleased with how things had gone. So, I think overall pleasing for a number of reasons, not only on the pitch, but for the sort of positive feeling they created for their fans. And if they can now combine that home and away, as the last week or so has sort of suggested, then I think they're really on the way to being in that top six. And I think everyone now is starting to feel like, rather than that being sort of less of an abstract possibility, that it's actually a realistic expectation and a situation that could very much end up happening, given the run of games Norwich have now. I know they've got difficult fixtures in the form of Ipswich and Leicester, and maybe to a lesser extent having to go to Preston as well. But aside from that, they've got a really decent run in. They've got a great opportunity that they've created for themselves, and with obviously all the exciting action going on around Coventry that we discussed earlier, and them and Hull not playing, it just created that gap, and it gave them a little bit of a cushion, and the pressure is all on the other sides, whereas it's been on Norwich to chase and to get into that top six all the way up until now. So yeah, a number of really, really pleasing aspects, and I'm delighted for those away fans, because they remained in positive spirits for a long while now, based purely on home form. And for those ones that maybe aren't based in and around Norwich, I'm delighted for them that they've actually had some reward for their efforts now.
Yeah, just over 1,700 in Staffordshire yesterday, and they were in wonderful voice and in wonderful spirits, as you can imagine, throughout the contest. Particularly like the adaptation of the Fleetwood Mac song. Is it everywhere? Is that what the song's called? Yeah, so it's an adaptation of that, which is out there. I think there's lyrics to learn, which I'm not going to sing it. Sorry, but there are lyrics for people to learn for, you know, when that comes back to Carrow Road, because that was that sounded pretty resplendent yesterday. And it's always nice when something like that surfaces as well. Very quickly, gents, either of you two know the last time Norwich City won 3-0 on the road in certainly the last time they won 3-0 on the road, but definitely the last time they won 3-0 on the road in the Championship. Can either of you gents think back to that? If not, I will reveal the answer, because you do have to go back a little bit of a way. Obviously they've won by bigger margins. They've won by 4 at Huddersfield, and there was a 5 at Sheffield Wednesday, wasn't there, once upon a time? Yeah. But 3-0 exactly. Can you remember the last time they did that?
No, Swansea.
It's not the answer, so I don't know why I'm thinking about it. But I was trying to think of a Swansea 3-0, but no. The last time is a 3-0 victory over Watford, which you might remember for Wes Houlihan being quite theatrical with a dive in the penalty area. That was the last time that Norwich City won 3-0.
Was that like under Alex Neil? That was on the way to getting promoted via the playoffs last time, wasn't it? Sorry, you were probably going to say that.
You've stolen my thunder, which is exactly why I reference it. But it is, Paddy. Just, you know, it's the first time I've watched this Norwich City group, and you know, as Sam says, I think there's maybe been a not a belief, but maybe a hope. I think everyone's been hoping maybe that they can find another gear and get into the top six. This was the first time I've watched a game and a performance from them where they looked like a side that was, I don't want to say destined, but definitely heading in that direction. It was, you know, as Stephen Schumacher said post-match, they were powerful, they were quick, they were dominant, they controlled it for extended periods, really, maybe barring a slight spell early in the first half, got goals at good times, took goals in good manners, and really inserted themselves onto the game. It was a team that, you know, I used this expression last week, very much now looks like it's grown into its own skin, looks very comfortable, looks very confident, and almost has a slight swagger about it as well. It's quite remarkable just how quickly it's turned around. I mean, even you go back to, well, you could go back to last month and that Watford game and all of the debate and discourse around that. But in terms of performances, you could go back to January, and, you know, I don't want to blow our own trumpet, but we said during that run, you know, one of two things will happen. Either the results will catch up with the performances, or the performances will catch up with the results. And actually, it's been a case that the performances have caught up with the results. And Norwich City now are in such a groove. They're in such a run. And they're pretty fantastic to watch when they're in the rhythm that they are, like they were yesterday.
Yeah, absolutely. As we said last weekend, the caveat that you're playing a team who are far too compliant, and as Stephen Schumacher, you referenced him there, he said there was a gulf between the sides, between his side and Norwich. One looked a top six side, one looked what they are, which is now 2 points outside the relegation zone, and got it all on to stay in the Championship, which for a club of Stoke stature and recent pedigree, and the signings they made last summer, as David Wagner said post-match on Saturday, you look at their individuals as players and they should be in and around where Norwich are. There's no doubt about it. What's gone on there, we can only assume, looking at it from afar, but managerial change, Alex Neil out, Stephen Schumacher in, one or two changes above them as well. So, yeah, there's absolutely no doubt that, albeit in favourable conditions again yesterday, as it was against Rotherham the previous week, but that's fine. You know, you will have that. Are you good enough as a collective and as individuals to be ruthless, to be efficient, to maximise, you know, a team who are all the opposite, who looked fragile, who looked brittle? Stephen Schumacher talking about a lack of courage and a belief, a lack of leaders in his team in those moments to step forward. I think as we drill into to yesterday's game, you know, the key element for them was losing Ben Pearson, who's not everyone's cup of tea, but in the centre of the park, he is quite a tigerish presence. He is one of their leaders. I don't think it's a coincidence. As soon as he was removed, that's when Norwich cut loose. 2 goals in 4 minutes, very shortly after his departure. The spaces that opened up. But you have to be good enough. And let's be honest, when you've got Borja Sainz, when you've got Gabby Zara, when you've got Josh Sargent in the goal-scoring form he's in, they are good enough. When you've got Kenny McLean pulling the strings as well. You know, it's one thing having the wind at your back, but you need, and at this stage of the season particularly, you need to make the most of it. And I think Ashley Barnes said it, didn't he, Connor, in his post-match, that when you sense blood, you do have to go for it and you have to show no mercy. And this Norwich collective, with players like Barnes, McLean, one or two other experienced professionals in there, mixed in now around very good, technically very good players, creative players. Nunes, didn't even mention him. You could throw him in as well now. The balance feels right. What they're doing out of possession and in possession feels right. And it's maybe taken to this point now because we know we don't need to dissect forensically the whole timeline of this season. But in periods of this season, they've looked good maybe in one aspect of the game with the ball, but maybe less so without it. David himself, at various points in this last 3 or 4 month turnaround, has talked about, right, now we need to focus on being tighter defensively and stop leaking goals. And the QPR game comes to mind, that one after the international break, was it? When they ground out a 1-0, you could argue QPR deserved something more at Carrow Road that day. But that was the first sign. And thereafter, we've seen, okay, now we've maybe got the platform in place defensively. Can we be better in possession? Can we be better on the ball? Sam talked about that whole game, and that was an example where they needed to be better with the ball, because that was hanging on for dear life at times. And then just, whereas Hull didn't have the punch that night, allied to Angus Gunn was very good when he needed to be, Norwich did find a way. But we all knew that that was a performance that wouldn't get the job done in terms of getting into the top six. And now we move on to what we saw yesterday. It's all come together perfectly. And it's very hard to see how this Norwich collective can be stopped now if it continues the way we're seeing now, which is consistently good performances with and without the ball, a confidence surging. You know, look at the manner of just those first two goals is all I would say, is at the right time, perfect pass from McLean, at the right time, Sainz making his run, at the right time, the ball inside, at the right time, Zara coming onto it, and then just instinctively left side foot finish, 18 yards out. Science again drawing the keeper, right time, Sergeant. You know, everything now, it's like this high-end clock with all these mechanisms that are working perfectly in sync and in harmony now, and the end product is just this joyous thing to watch, which is a Norwich team moving with this smoothness and belief and confidence, and they know what the end goal is. They know they're good enough to get there. They're now showing they're good enough to get there. And you know, it's hard while everything stays as it is now, of course, and we might get into this in depth. You know, there are those injury concerns still around this group, but with a fair wind on that front between now and the end of the season, it's very difficult not to to suggest that Norwich will be in the top six, because you know, the manner they're dominating championship opponents, albeit, yeah, maybe teams at the wrong end of the table. But even in this run, you know, West Brom at home, Coventry at home, very, very well-merited performances and results those days. So they're doing it. Southampton, okay, they hung on for dear life, but they got the job done. And that will be a trait they'll need to show both in this 8-game swing of the regular season that's left, but also if they do get into the playoffs, that resilience, because they won't have it all their own way. They will have to hang on. They will have to, with their backs against the wall, dig in. And we've seen that now, I think, enough evidence that they've got all the constituent parts to really be, you know, if they get into the playoffs, I don't think any team, I don't care whether it was hypothetically Ipswich finishing 20 points clear, Ipswich would not want Norwich over 2 games in the playoffs. And that's even parking the whole historical 15 years and counting. Norwich hitting the playoffs with momentum as they are now, no team will want to play Norwich in the playoffs.
Well, this is the point, and I'm going to flash up a table here now, which obviously people watching will be able to see. I'll talk people who are listening on audio, but this is essentially a table from Norwich City's, basically from the 11th of November, which was the date that Norwich City beat Cardiff 3-2 before the last international break. So since in that period, Norwich have played 23 games. They've won 13 of them. They've drawn five. They've lost five as well. Goals scored 43, conceded 24. A goal difference of plus 19. But crucially, it's 44 points for Norwich in 23. And you compare that to the rest of the Championship. So if the Championship started on that date and obviously took it all the way up to now, only Ipswich, Southampton and Daniel Farke's Leeds United have taken more points than Norwich City in that period. Obviously, this is slightly skewed because Southampton have played 21 games, for example. Leicester, who are fifth, obviously they're the current league leaders. Norwich City have taken more points over that period than Leicester City. But Leicester do have a game in hand, which if they won, would basically leapfrog them. And it's the same with a few teams because of FA Cup progress. But in that run, they've taken more points than Coventry, more points than West Brom, more points than Hull. I mean, Sam, this is an incredible record. I mean, this is half a season worth of form from Norwich City. 44 points in 23 games. I think in most seasons, that would be pretty close to, maybe not exactly, but pretty close to being, as it is there, to be fair, automatic promotion form. Considering they started this run kind of in and around 17th, they're now in sixth and they have a three-point cushion. Obviously, you know, we've spoken about the caveats of games in hand and all of this stuff. I mean, that is an incredible block of form for any side, but particularly this Norwich City side.
Yeah, I think the longevity of it is what makes it so exciting, because we have talked about previously not only Norwich but David Wagner's sides as streaky, and I feel like his career at the club so far was broken up into various runs of 11 games and two of them weren't especially favourable at all. So to them then apply that to, you know, as you said, half a season, an enormous block of games, and to have such positive form throughout that period, I think is really encouraging. And it's not only been this surge of momentum that's been purely positive and we're waiting for a setback to almost cause it to fall apart or implode. There have been setbacks and there have been short periods of disappointment, and what's been really encouraging is seeing them actually come back from that, whereas before you felt like it was good form but it was really fragile, because as soon as maybe there was a defeat or there were a couple of weeks where things weren't going that well, that would turn into 6 weeks, 2 months, 3 months. And Norwich haven't let that happen when the sort of the bad spells have impacted them. So, yeah, I think that's really encouraging. And I'm sure David Wagner will be pleased to have put to bed, for now at least, those ideas that maybe he has been too streaky throughout his career. I think it shows the fact probably that he's been better at dealing with problems and with coming up with solutions than maybe he has at other times in his career. So for me, when you look at that longevity, I think it's a credit to him, especially considering about 2 months of that was without Josh Sargent. Obviously, he came back right at the end of last year. So almost the whole of November and December, they had to deal without him, and that was still pretty good form. Although, you know, obviously we'll recall that the football wasn't especially exciting to watch at that time. So, yeah, I think it bodes well for Norwich in the future that they're now starting to show signs that they can overcome adversity and that they can deal with problems. And although the Championship is a division based enormously on momentum and the importance of that, Norwich aren't solely reliant on the confidence that getting three or four wins in a row provides. So although that is there now, and that will be a big factor for them going into the run-in, and as Pad said, in the playoffs, if they get there, I think the encouraging thing from looking at that table is that isn't the source of everything positive that they've done.
Yes, agreed. And I think what is interesting as well, Paddy, is obviously, you know, there's been, and you said it in an earlier answer, plenty of conversation about David Wagner at various points of this season. So, you know, and it's definitely in that period at the autumn, justly. And I think if you'd have polled people, you know, and we've spoken about this at length, so I don't think we really need to cover old ground. But at Sunderland, he looks pretty broken in terms of his demeanour and whatnot that day. Blackburn at home felt like a crunch period. He and his coaching team as well, because it's never just him. But him, he deserves immense credit, doesn't he, for what he's done? Because from the position that he was in, I think you'd have got pretty long odds on him delivering what he has delivered at Norwich City. And if Norwich City, let's say theoretically, hypothetically, did make that change in the autumn, and this was a different manager leading Norwich City on this run of form, everyone would be singing their praises. I mean, he deserves, I don't know, is he getting enough credit for how he's transformed this Norwich City team in your view? Because it's a remarkable achievement what they've done over, as that table shows, half a season's worth of form, really.
Yeah, I don't know. It's an interesting one. And probably throw it out there and to the fan base. You know, I am starting to see a lot of people saying, well, I'll hold my hands up. I was in the Wagner out camp, and you can't argue with the last 5 minutes of this discussion, the empirical evidence that he's the figurehead in terms of the footballing side. He's led this to this point, you know, that block of 23 games and the points and the wins, and not just the results, the performances as well, because, you know, they were eking out results over the entirety of his, whatever it is now, sort of 15 months or so in charge, in periods of time. But I distinctly remember a lot of talk sort of last season moving into this about identity. When are we going to see a David Wagner identity on this side? What is Norwich City? What is a David Wagner Norwich City with and without the ball? Well, just go and watch that Stoke game now. The most recent example, that is a David Wagner Norwich side, and it's proven residually effective. And yeah, on a personal level, I mean, it's not all that long ago we had the Watford outburst and for his in-game substitutions that night. And, you know, to go from that to this is, well, it's remarkable, really, in terms of him as an individual on a personal human level and the journey he's on and what it says about his character and his maybe stubbornness in a nice way and pig-headedness that, no, I'm not going to throw the towel in here now. I'm not going to walk away. I'm sure, you know, it would have been easier for him at points, particularly that very dark spell of 7 defeats in 9 around that Cardiff win in November and the Bristol City win as well, when the pressure was intense. And we know subsequently that, you know, there were discussions above him about whether to back him or, you know, sack him in modern parlance, and they decided to back him. And as much as we're discussing, you know, David Wagner and him holding his nerve, you know, we also have to sort of hat tip to the board as well and the executive, you know, that they have decided that, no, we were going to stick with him. We believe, albeit there's a lot of turbulence and it feels like maybe we're going down a dead end. No, we still feel that the stated aim at the start of this season, before a ball was kicked, to get this team in the top six, David Wagner is the man to deliver that with his coaching staff and all the backroom team. So they deserve credit. Obviously, you know, as always with the nature of football discourse, you take a fixed point in time and it'll be, you know, if it was 7 defeats in 9 and we're having conversations or fans are having conversations and everything's dark, everything's disconnected, broken, in pieces, and it needs other people to put it back together. Now we're looking back through the prism of those 23-game block, you know, tremendously consistent winning surge at Carr Road. Now they're winning games on the road, and deservedly so by their performances, then everything is positive. It's never one thing or the other. There's always nuance. There's always, you know, shades of debate and discourse around this. But what is indisputable is David Wagner on a personal level as... And it'll be interesting to maybe when the dust settles at some point, maybe in the summer, just in a more reflective moment, to get his take. Was this probably one of, if not the most testing period of his coaching career? And I know he had his problems at Schalke and he would obviously hit back that there was a lot of, you know, things going off on off the pitch there, which didn't really help his cause at all. But Huddersfield, it went quite tough for him towards the end and he decided, you know, he maybe needed to part ways there. But I would be surprised if he's emerged through as testing a spell as he's had here in that period at Norwich. And whatever he goes on to do, whatever he does from here on, I'm sure he will draw on that because, you know, inevitable, the nature of the business he's in is you will be tested and there will be dark periods as a coach. And it must give him great confidence and inner belief that he's emerged from it. But it's not just him. Yeah, as you say, it's the coaching staff around him. They would have felt it. They would have felt the pressure. You know, often we heard during that spell, I think Kenny McLean came out after one or two games, they couldn't work any harder. No stone was being left unturned. They were doing everything. There was still a laser-like belief that they as a group could achieve something, but it must be very hard. And, you know, when the adversity is as it was at that period. But, yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, for me, it's... it's a testament to the man. And you know, now you look back and that almost him having a right of reply to the Watford cap calls that night, has that cleansed? Has that kind of brought people back on side? Maybe the ones who were not wedded to he's not for us, get him out, but were still in that camp where they want him to succeed. And obviously immediately afterwards, and he said himself in the days that followed, maybe his words were too harsh and too strong. But, you know, if you're looking for watershed moments, maybe there was one right there, because there's no doubt since then, whether it's the Car Road atmosphere, whether it's that kind of sense we're all in it together, whether it's the players and Ashley Barnes again, you know, obviously we'll probably get into it. There was, you know, issues in David's personal life in the last few days that were very challenging for him, and Ashley Barnes coming out after the game on Saturday and saying that was for the boss kind of thing. You know, that all these elements come together and have to come together. If you are a team who are going to emerge from the Championship via the playoffs, then you don't do that if there's a disconnect, if there's a fractures, if there's people want one thing and others are pulling in a different direction. That only happens, and go back to 14-15, when Alex Neil came in and galvanised it and took everybody outside the club, inside the club on that unforgettable journey. That only happens if you have everybody on the same page and willing to buy in, and selflessly willing to buy in. It's not about now Josh Sargent scoring goals. It's not about Gabby Zara with his ridiculous amounts of goal contributions. It's not about Angus Gunn keeping clean sheets and the rest of his defence. It's the collective now, and it's everybody putting their shoulder to the wheel, and that includes the fans as well, to achieve that end goal, which is another crack at the Premier League.
Yeah, bang on. And you touched upon it there. I mean, this week more than any week, I think it's particularly pertinent to reflect on David Wagner, kind of the man, because even, and you know, we said this during those very testing times during the autumn, when he was getting asked uncomfortable questions. I remember a particularly pointed one, not one that we asked by any stretch of the imagination, but that someone asked him after Blackburn directly, are you going to resign? I mean, that's a very difficult question to get for any head coach. And, you know, most head coaches and managers, and we've seen plenty of them, walk through the Carrow Road press room at various points, be it as in charge of Norwich or other clubs, can engage with those questions in lots of different ways. But he engaged with it very fairly, and has always engaged with questions very fairly, even at times maybe where he's not felt they were particularly fair or warranted or whatever. And I think that's obviously a testament to the way that he's conducted himself, Sam, over this period. And as Paddy said, he's clearly had a very tough few days. He's been away from the club. He confirmed to Chris Gorham after the game that his wife had some surgery. It sounds like she's on the mend, which is fantastic, and hopefully going to be out of hospital in the next couple of days. So, you know, it goes without saying, we obviously wish her and David and his family all the best. But it is... You know, credit to him, really, the way that he's conducted himself throughout this season. Because actually, if you take him now compared to, you know, in those dark periods, he's been pretty consistent. And that is what you need as a head coach in terms of mood. He's not bounced up and down, with maybe the exception of that Watford game. But everything was heightened on that particular occasion. He has been, you know, in terms of the figurehead of Norwich City, I think he's shown incredible integrity, irrespective of how results have gone or what people's feelings are towards him. It's hard to argue with the base of results, because it's not just that turnaround from that table that we showed. It is the nature of it as well, as Paddy referenced, the performances, the problem solving that they've conducted throughout the stages of the season. Everything about this Norwich City side at the moment feels improved, and him and his coaching team obviously have to take incredible plaudits for that. And I guess, you know, just the final point, it's probably a reflection that, you know, even through really bad runs, and this applies for every coach, no coach is probably ever as maybe good as everyone thinks or bad as everyone thinks. That they're probably somewhere in the middle.
Yeah, I think they've done a good job behind the scenes of keeping everyone level and keeping that atmosphere within the changing room. You hear quite a lot of managers come out and say that everyone in the changing room is tight and saying the right things as much as possible regarding, you know, whether everyone's together and whether they back the manager. But I think from what we heard, you got the sense that there actually genuinely was a feeling that they were still fighting for Wagner. It didn't feel, I mean, probably Blackburn aside, that they were throwing the towel in at any point, or that they thought the regime was going to come apart. I think within the dressing room this season, to be fair, they have remained really strong and together, and they seem to be a group of players that really likes David Wagner. And there are a lot of players in that group that maybe have struggled with the style of play at times, that have played out or in positions they maybe wouldn't be used to, that have struggled for game time since he came to the club. But still, there seems to be a level of harmony behind the scenes and a togetherness that I think is showing itself now in that, you know, that consistency that you spoke about. And a lot of that credit does go to David Wagner. You know, as Paddy referenced, speaking about Barnes and his support of Wagner and how he dedicated the win yesterday and things like that. So, yeah, I think he's helped engender that feeling of consistency. And although it's a cliche that probably every manager has or will come out with it at some point in their career, of never getting too high or too low, I think not only does Wagner manage to sustain that within himself, but he manages to sustain that within his players. And I think if you look at it, if you look at the run of form they're now in the reverse way to how we were looking at it back then, it felt at the time like almost any other Championship manager would have gone and that Wagner maybe was fortunate to stay in his job at the time. But that also means now that he's probably had a greater sort of comeback or a greater turnaround than is common to see really in football and at this high level at the moment. So I think he deserves an enormous amount of credit, and obviously the discussion around him and the amount of praise that he's seeing probably tells you enough about that, because people and especially football fans aren't good at admitting they were wrong. But you're getting a lot of people now admitting that although they were in the Wagner out camp and that they maybe didn't think he was the best man for the job a few months ago, that he has done a remarkable job to get Norwich in that promotion race. So yeah, I think an enormous amount of credit to him. And yeah, I think the Watford one is the really interesting sort of turning point, because that feels to me now in hindsight like a sliding doors moment. And to be fair, it's not just in hindsight. I remember having the conversation at the time that could have been the best thing that happened to them this season. But you know, conversely, I think if they end up drawing that game 2-2 and the fans were almost, I mean, obviously they didn't know the reasons behind the substitutions and things like that, but the fans had almost been proven right by the result. I'm doing air quotes for podcast listeners. With that result, then I think that could have been the worst thing that happened to them this season. So for me, looking back at that, that is the real sliding doors moment, because I think it made everyone realise that something has to change in terms of the atmosphere between the players and the staff and those responsible for the results and those responsible for sort of reacting to the performances. So yeah, I think since then there has been a real sense of unity, and that stuff I talked about within the changing room seems to have got not only into Carrow Road but to the travelling supporters and to the general feeling around the football club. And I think that's only to Norwich's benefit. It only adds to that sense of momentum that I talked about building earlier. And I think going into the playoffs, it feels like finally, for the first time in a few years actually, everyone is aligned and everyone sees things in the same way and is going in the same direction.
Yes, and clearly, you know, there's 8 games to go and lots can happen and lots can change. Norwich City still have to get there. But I mean, I'll be completely honest, in that autumn after that Blackburn game, I'm not sure that I really saw how it could continue, how it would continue, how we would get to a stage where we're at now. So, you know, I guess it, amongst all of those people, they're probably, you know, us guys and everyone else putting their hands up and saying, I didn't see this coming. I didn't see Norwich City producing these levels of performances. And yeah, those obviously who have been behind it deserve tremendous credit. But you know, the caveat is we've got 8 games to go and plenty of games to play. And obviously, I'm sure come the end of the season, there'll be a real dissection into everything that's happened this year. And I guess, obviously, the elephant in the room will be around David Wagner and whether he continues. And, you know, it's going to be a hard argument for those at Norwich City to make if he gets into the top 6 that he shouldn't do. If that, as Paddy said, you know, right at the start, and we said that right from the start, that was the objective this season. So, yeah, we'll save that debate for another day. But, yeah, I thought it was important to say that and, again, reiterate our best wishes to David and his family, and hopefully obviously everything gets sorted out over the international break. This feels like an apt time to actually we'll speak a little bit about Gabriel Sarr, then we'll come back to our Bring the Heat segment in association with our sponsors, Coleman's of Norwich. Paddy, I mean, we could pick out, you know, any player really from yesterday. We could pick out Borja Sainz and what he's done. I wrote a piece about him on Saturday morning saying, and there was a little element of that, which was a bit like, need to see a bit more from him creatively, because that's maybe been the element of his game that we haven't quite seen. I think he delivered that at Stoke. There obviously is a consistency point, but that was good to see. We could talk about Josh Sargent getting another goal, but I think if I'm honest, he's dominated far, you know, loads and loads of airtime on this podcast, rightly so, by the way, and it's incredible what he is doing. We could talk about Kenny McLean, who is one shy of making his 200th appearance for the club, and I thought was absolutely mammoth yesterday in terms of everything that Norwich City did. Obviously, his role in both of the goals, but his all-round game, as it has been all season, really has been incredible. And you know, shout if either of you two agree, but to me, it feels like he is basically on a coronation march to getting player of the season now. I don't really see many competitors in that sphere. But I did want to mention Gabriel Sara, because he maybe he is in this conversation, I don't know. But 10 goals, 11 assists for the season now. He's achieved what is known in championships circles as a double-double, which is very, very hard to achieve. And it's often, you know, the best players, it's seen as the best players in the league who are able to do that. Only two other players in the league this season have done that so far, one of which is Adam Armstrong at Southampton, and the other one is Kean in Dewsbury Hall. Now, worth saying, both of those players have played Premier League football, and many would consider to be too good for the level, and obviously playing for relegated teams. So I do think that maybe gives Sarah's one a little bit more elevation, because this is a player who has never played Premier League football and is only in his second season of English football. He's the first player, Paddy, since Emi Buendia to do it for Norwich in obviously their last championship title winning campaign. He is, especially with the context of having to play in a new role and considering he's played as well in a deeper position for much of the season, to record those levels of numbers, absolutely tremendous what he's achieved this season. It's hard not to look at him, be it with Norwich, and we obviously all hope that's the case, or without Norwich, he's destined for the Premier League, isn't he?
Well, he is, and you quoted Buendia with an Norwich perspective. I'm just, as I'm speaking, I just wanted to see what Madders did in that 17-18 season. I know he had 15, but whether it was just 15 goal contributions. But the reason I want to throw him in is basically both of those at that time playing for Norwich, second tier, okay, brilliant, yeah. Couldn't they go on and do it? And, you know, Buendia less so, because he's obviously had a bad injury at Villa, but Maddison has quite clearly proven himself to be a high-end Premier League performer. And Buendia, I think, with Emery and what they're doing at Villa, probably can get to that point as well. And you have to be honest and say that Zara, given his age profile as well, you know, what is he, 24? I mean, it's frightening, really, that he's got all that growth in his game anyway, that natural growth. I've got Madders' stats now. 17-18, he had 14 goals and 8 assists in 44 championship games. That is, in this conversation, where we're putting Gabby Zara now, on a plane with Maddison, on a plane with Buendia, as a creative force for Norwich in the championship, but then trying to...
Well, I'll just jump in and read Buendia's numbers, which was, he played 39 games with 15 goals and 17 assists. I think Sarah will do very well to compete with those numbers, but yeah, definitely on a par with what Maddison did, like you say.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, that earned him a move to Leicester with change, sort of low-end 20 mils, but that was quite a few years ago now, and Buendia, we would know, was a lot more north of that. It's a mute point at the minute, but where would Zara fit in terms of?
Well, I was going to ask you the question. Where would you? What price would you put on him if you were Ben Napper heading into this summer? What price tag would you be putting on Gabriel Sara's head?
The only negative is, and it's nothing that he's really is that there are those question marks about, you know, what is his best position, because he, you know, it isn't like Maddison was in the same space, Buendia was in the same space, and that's not anything that he can really control, but we're now starting to see him, by definition, playing more further forward. He's got McLean and Nunes in this system behind him, so that defensive protection, he's done a recent sit down with Grant Holt for the club's channels and talked about that doesn't come naturally to him. That wasn't how he learnt the game in Brazil. That isn't the demands placed on a midfielder in the Brazilian leagues, that defensive nous and running back towards your own goal. But playing him where he is now, slightly on the right hand side. But you know, look at the Rotherham goal last week. Look at the Stoke goal on Saturday. Where is he scoring that goal? He's arriving on the edge of opposition penalty boxes because his starting position in that role is a lot higher. That irrefutably to me is where he can inflict maximum damage. It accentuates his natural creative goal scoring ability. And if he had, I'm fairly confident, if he hadn't had to play in those more deeper withdrawn roles this season, the numbers we're talking about now, he'd have been far north of those. And he might have been in Buendia territory because he's doing that where, and I've not shaken down how many of the 37, 38, 39 appearances now in the league were in a more deeper lying role, but quite a high proportion of them. So I think if you're a Premier League club and a Premier League recruitment department, you're not quite sure what is he and how you incorporate him into your team, because your body of evidence is kind of what he's played at this position, he's played that position. Of course, there will be Premier League teams who might value that versatility and that you can mould that player. You know, if he was like Madison, had the English passport, I think homegrown players in the scale of kind of Premier League squads now and FA drives to encourage more homegrown talent, I think that would put a higher premium on his price tag. But I don't know, I've not really stopped and thought about it, but you've got to be thinking north of 25 mil, I would think, in the current market. And then, as always with these things, it's how many potential suitors want him, because that will drive up the price. But obviously with the Leicester one, I think they were the only ones who showed their hand for Madison, so you're kind of hamstrung to a degree. I think there was chatter of other clubs, but I think Villa, again, in terms of the Buendia chase, were the only ones who really put the money down. So in terms of what he's worth, it will probably depend on, you know, how many clubs think he is a player of some promise. But he is still promise. And, you know, Chris Sutton has written for us. I think Hooks, I've seen on X as well. Two ex-pros who know what the game's all about. They've questioned just what is Zara, and that there are areas of his game that he needs to improve on. And you might say, well, that's natural. He's only in his really second full season in England. He's only 24 years of age, you know. That will come, you would hope, because he strikes me as a very intelligent player, not on the pitch, but off the pitch as well, so, as a person. So I think he will be well aware that he's not the finished article, but you can only really sort of marvel at that in a team that haven't had that consistent trajectory. It has been difficult. We've discussed in this podcast alone that they've had some very turbulent periods. And what I would say is we're looking at, 21 goal contributions in 37, 38 games now. 12 league games around the turn of the year, he didn't add to those tallies. So what would he, you know, if he had just continued on the rate he was on in terms of goals and assists? They're remarkable numbers in a team that haven't had it all their own way this season. And yeah, I mean, going back to your earlier point about there is quite a strong camp for Sara in the player of the season stakes. I've seen it on X almost to the, you know, trying to detrimentally downplay McLean's influence on this team, and you know how one is maybe more technically proficient all-rounder than McLean. I mean, that's a debate to be had. Fans can debate that all they want, but yeah, there's no doubt him or McLean for me would be worthy player of the season contenders. But he lifted it last year, didn't he? And was nowhere near good enough this season. So you know, I don't think too many really surely would begrudge McLean lifting it this year for the overall influence that he's exerted. But yeah, just to bring it full circle, Gabby Zara will be a Premier League player, and we all hope it's with Norwich.
I feel like I'm going to become Bruce Forsyth here, Sam. Higher, 20, Pad says 25, higher or lower than that, do you think? Or same, you can agree, that's fine.
Yeah, that... Yeah, I think it will be in and around that ballpark, but you'd like to think Norwich will maybe push for higher. I just think it's one of those transfers where if you'd see it with another club, it feels like it would be more. I don't know whether that is because obviously we all view things from a Norwich bubble and it feels like they're a different sort of club, but I just think if Brentford had a player like a Gabriel Sara, I know they're in the Premier League, so it's kind of more difficult to theorise in that space, but I feel like if Brentford were in the Championship and they had a player like Gabriel Sara, would it be getting towards 30 and 35 million? I mean, I don't know why it feels like that, but it feels like maybe at certain other clubs that are, have maybe been more fashionable in the last couple of years, that it, they maybe would be able to get more out of it. I think the fact that financially they're not in a, an amazing situation doesn't really help them. But yeah, I would feel like they should be pushing for sort of 30 million, because the talent that, that Sarah has is clear. He's a great age. He's in a really, really important position in the pitch as well. It's not like he's a sensational right back that will probably be, you know, fifth or sixth down your list of priorities if you're, you know, looking at the transfer market and looking at important areas to improve. He's a, he could realistically change the season of a team around the bottom of the Premier League, and we know how important and how significant that is when you consider the financial numbers involved in that. So for me, you'd like to think from a Norwich perspective that they will push for towards those 30 million figures and maybe even higher than that. You know, he has a certain even physicality I think Buendia lacked at times, and although I know he had that bite and he had that desire to go in for a tackle and he would work hard, Sarah both has a, I think he has more of a natural physicality. He's obviously much larger and has, I think, a bit more natural strength than Buendia has. He also isn't prone to sending offs and fits of rage in the same way that, that Buendia was at times at Norwich. So you look at, for me, the numbers involved in that deal to go to Aston Villa, and although I think it's probably not too controversial an opinion to say that Buendia was better to watch, I think in terms of being Premier League ready and being an attractive prospect to slot into certain teams in the Premier League, especially those in sort of the bottom half, it feels to me like Sarah might be more of that profile. The element barring that, I agree with Paddy, really, is that he feels still like a work in progress. And there is an element to that that I'm sure will I don't want to say put clubs off, but obviously it's in the negative column when you consider whether to sign him or not. So it is quite an interesting one to think about, really. But yeah, as Pad said, we can theorise all we want. The reality is that if four clubs come in with offers, he's worth a lot more than if one club do, and that probably is what it comes down to.
Yeah, very quickly, because we've gone down this path, and I'm not by any means trying to start a fire sale, but I think it is an interesting conversation. I'll leave it because we're running out of time slightly, and we've got other things that we want to talk about. But very, very quickly, I'll give you one figure, essentially, with no explanation. Paddy, we'll start to you. Josh Sargent, what sort of value would you be attributing to him?
Well, I mean, again, that comes down to the sample size. I mean, if he'd been fit, all season and continued.
We're going down explanation avenues here, Pad. Come on. One figure.
35 million.
Whoa. Sam.
I was actually going to go lower end because of that sample size. I'm not sure he's proven it enough.
We're explaining again. We're explaining again. Come on. Play the game.
20 million.
20?
I just
no.
He's clearly, but he's had injury issues, and he has.
No, you've said it now, so that's okay, that's
okay. Well,
that's
there
fine.
It is. 20 to 25, whatever.
No, you said 20. That's it. That's locked in. And I'll go for between 32 and 35. And John Rowe, Pad. Let's start with Rowe. What figure would you be putting on John Rowe?
25.
Sam.
Yeah, 20 to 25.
Not 12 or anything like that.
No, come on. he's missed several months. He's had ankle issues for 2 years, and he scored.
Yeah,
two
look at what he's done.
League.
Look at what he's done.
Yeah, great.
And he's
player.
A number nine.
He's clearly a fan. I don't think anyone. Yeah, okay, fine. That's a very valid point. And you know, we were all happy to be proven wrong about Wagner. If Sargent goes for 60 million or whatever you lot are predicting in the summer, then I'll be delighted. Obviously, only if Norwich aren't promoted. If they're promoted and then sell their key striker, then I'll be very disappointed.
If he goes for 20, then Norwich needs to get onto some anti-fraud line, I think, for that deal, to be honest. But there we go. I'm sure people can, again, obviously, before anyone gets too angry, we're not trying to sell these players or advocating anything like that. It's just a little bit of fun. So we'd obviously like to know your figures and whatnot as well. You can leave them in the comments, and you know, you can, if anyone agrees with Sam's 20 million, I'd be shocked. But
right, I'll say 25.
No, you can't. It's too late now. Yeah, it's too late. Where was I going to go? Yes, bring the heat. Let's close with a little bit of this. Paddy, you know, of course, this segment brought to you in association with our sponsors, Coleman's of Norwich, who produce the very finest mustard in the land. Paddy, who brought the heat for you this week?
Well, I'm going to curry favour with the travelling support and
sucking up as usual.
No, one element, because I thought it was hilarious and very organically sharp as well, which was Stephen Schumacher at the
final. Oh, yes, yeah.
Trooping. Oh, yeah, it's a good one now, is it, Connor?
It's
right.
Good,
yeah. Trooping towards the tunnel, which we've already talked about, is essentially where the away end congregate. And the reason I've explained that in a bit more minute detail is because, of course, Stephen Schumacher, formerly at Plymouth, who inflicted a rather, well, impertinent because Plymouth are the next team up for Norwich Riverside in international break. But that lowest of low, humiliating, embarrassing 6-2 rout at Home Park, where the away the fans were right in the same space in terms of the proximity to the tunnel. And I thought it was delicious irony that day, obviously at Home Park, the Norwich players and David and his coaches had to run the gauntlet quite rightly from the away fans who'd gone a long, long way to witness that abject surrender. And this time around, Schumacher, the architect of that, was greeted as head bowed down the tunnel, dejection written all over his face with chance of you getting sacked in the morning. So I thought that was very cold revenge exacted there, I think. And hopefully that when Plymouth actually come to Carrow Road, that they'll get a bit of that as well, on the pitch as well as off it.
Sam, who brought the heat for you this week?
I'm going to go for Ashley Barnes. I think there's been obviously a lot of heat from him on defenders throughout the season, really. And I've criticised it quite a lot for not being the key element in football. And I've said that there's been too much discussion about intangibles and experience and things. But I actually felt that he was up to his antics at the absolute best time when you really need it yesterday. With Norwich 2-0 up, having to do a bit of defending and probably a bit of time wasting to get into half time, sure that they still had that 2-0 lead. That was when he started sort of slowing the game down, maybe getting in the referee's ear a little bit. And I thought that was actually the perfect use of that experience and those intangibles. So yeah, I'll give him credit because I think psychologically and game management wise, they dealt with that game really well, and he was a key part of that.
Brilliant stuff. I am going to go for, and as we all know, there ain't no party like an S-Club party. I'm going to go for S-Club 7, purely because it allows me to crowbar this reference in. As of 2-0, the last seven Norwich City scorers were all beginning with the letter S, and we spoke a little bit about this last week. And then obviously Sargent and Sarah added to that. Also, I think Sainz got one assist for one and then a sort of assist, but he's not going to get that on any type of record for the second. So that run of S's continued, and it was obviously broken as Sam referenced by Ashley Barnes. I'm going to go for S Club 7 as bringing the heat this week. I don't know any of their other songs, I'm afraid. So there's one about stars, isn't there? I think so. That's the only reference that I have really. Let's close on internationals then, Paddy, because you teed this up a little bit earlier, and it's worth saying at this point we are planning on recording a podcast next week, which will go a little bit more in depth in terms of top six races and run-ins and all of that stuff, and we may be in a different location as well, so we'll just let people aware of that. That should come to you probably the end of next week, or this week, sorry. So we'll see you, and obviously we'll notify you when that does come out, and I'm sure you'll be able to find it in all your usual places, but just want to put people on notice on that because I'll forget at the end. But yes, Paddy, there's obviously some injury concerns for Norwich City. Grant Hanley is an interesting one, isn't it? Because that isn't actually an injury concern, but there's clearly a fitness sort of catch up to do, which is probably understandable. And Josh Sargent as well. Whenever you hear the words Josh Sargent and an ankle in the same sentence, I think it does create a shudder. Both of them have been called up to their respective international sides, but it doesn't sound like they're going to be joining up. So maybe not the element of crossing fingers and praying for no injuries that perhaps could have been the case for Norwich City in the next fortnight or so.
Indeed, yeah. I mean, the full context on this is now on the pink, and what David had to say on this after the game Saturday. But essentially that you've got two key players, really, certainly Sargent, no doubt about it, for Norwich's playoff push. But both were technically going to be going off with their respective countries. That is definitely not going to happen with Grant Hanley. And as you say, Connor, wasn't involved at Stoke. No injury, but it would appear there's been some chats between David, Grant, the fitness performance guys, the sports science guys during the week, early part of last week at Colney. And they've obviously come to a collective decision that, and it was very interesting, the choice of language David used, that he needs to get his explosiveness back. And that is a key part of his defensive toolkit as a player, Grant Hanley. That David said he's probably the best or one of the best at what he does, that real physical type of centre-back at this level. They obviously don't feel post coming back. I mean, I checked this morning, he's had six starts, came back in off the bench, didn't he, at Boxing Day, on Boxing Day, sorry, at West Brom. That was his first appearance in 8 months. He had that really, really bad Achilles injury right about this time last year. I think it was April last year at Blackburn, Easter Friday, I'm going to say off the top of my head, Good Friday, sorry. Had surgery, and obviously anybody knows anything about Achilles injuries, that's particularly as you get older as a player, that's a very serious type of injury in it. And they obviously feel, on the evidence of this sample since he came back into the team, he's not quite got that sharpness, that explosiveness, that they feel now what's best served is you take him out of the team training cycle, and he's going to have a tailored fitness program for at least these two international weeks, and maybe potentially even longer, was the way David framed it. So that clearly rules him out of Scotland. They've got friendlies against the Netherlands and Northern Ireland. They're obviously at the Euros in the summer, and this was his first call-up since that injury. So it's on a personal level a bit of a blow, I'm sure, but there's no doubt that they'll be liaising with the Scottish medical teams and Steve Clark, the national team boss. And really, if it's about doing this now in order for Grant Hanley to potentially be available for Scotland in the summer, I think that makes more sense. So that's where we are with him. With Josh Sargent, yeah, we all know the backstory, 4 months out, best part of with this ankle injury that he damaged at Huddersfield in August, had surgery as well. And alarmingly for me, David, they're more or less saying that since he came back, and again, he was one who came back over the festive period, he hasn't trained one full week since. They're just basically managing this issue now. And David said he got another kick on it yesterday, icing it straight away. And they will assess him now. But the sense from David was that he won't go off to America have got a Nations League game against Jamaica, a semi-final. They win that, there'll be a final as well over this two-week period. Again, Josh Sargent, I'm sure, given that the US are co-hosting the World Cup in a couple of years' time, he will want to now be involved for his country, because that's a huge incentive for that man, I'm sure. But the priority is that player, the priority is that player's body, and the priority is Norwich and the Championship playoffs in the next 8-9 games. So yesterday, Saturday evening, it was still assessing the injury, or this latest knock, but everything that David said and how he said it, I'd be shocked if he does get on a plane and head to Texas, which is where they're playing this game, because he's just absolute, and we've discussed it at length on this pod, on recent pods, he's the difference maker. And we can talk about Zara, we can talk about science, yes, we can talk about Kenny McLean, but it's Josh Sargent, which for me has been the catalyst between where we were pre-Christmas, where we are now. And you lose him, with the greatest respect to Van Hooijdonk, with the greatest respect to Ashley Barnes, Ken Abbo even, you know, they won't give you what Josh Sargent is giving you. So I don't think it's anything to be overly worried about with him, but David would clearly want him to stay at Colney and just have 2 weeks rest and recuperation. Grant Hanley as well, because, you know, we can all see how injuries have dragged on Norwich's bid to get in that top six. And of course, you know, they're without now Arnel Hernandez, without John Rowe for the foreseeable. And you don't really want to be picking up too many more injuries at this stage, because particularly to a key player like Josh Sargent. So, you know, it would feel like, as we record this on Sunday morning, that both Sargent and Hanley won't be going off with their countries and will be, you know, wrapped in the proverbial cotton wool. I think Ewan Roberts did his column on that on Friday, that you need to keep the key players wrapped in cotton wool, because they're just too important and they're irreplaceable at this stage of the season with what's at stake for Norwich and that Premier League on the horizon. Club before country for me all day long.
Yeah, agreed. Let Josh Sargent lay on the sofa for 2 weeks, and we'll see him on Good Friday. I think that's the best way to do it, and maybe likewise with Grant Hanley as well. And with that being said, we're going to return to our respective sofas and revel in what was a fantastic away win for Norwich City, and for Paddy, we'll pop him back on cloud nine after an excellent Saturday, and we'll make sure we book an economics course for Sam Seaman to learn the transfer values of players in the meantime as well. We will be back next week. Thank you very much for watching. Thank you for listening. Of course, plenty more content over the international break. We've got some good stuff planned, hopefully all being well, within the next 2 weeks, and we'll obviously be back on Good Friday for Carrow Road visit of Plymouth Argyle. We'll see you then. Thank you for tuning in.